We did hear the news earlier in the week, guys, that John Gibbons will not be returning to the Blue Jays next season. He's still under contract for next year, and there have been some reports that he'll maybe stay on in some capacity doing something with the team. We just don't know as this point, but no surprise to anybody. We've been hearing these rumors for a large part of the season that John Gibbons would not be coming back, but we got official confirmation earlier in the week, and it was great to see. I think all the fan support in the final home game of the season, every time Gibby came out, got a standing ovation. Then at the end, of course, getting that great ovation from the fans, getting the Gatorade shower from Kevin Pillar and all the players waiting in the dugout to wait for John Gibbons to finish his interview with Hazel May. Like, it's really incredible, because we, you know, hear from time to time on caller show, you know, call-in shows like Blue Jays Talk, or, you know, even shows like the Jeff Blair Show, when people call in and have their gripes about John Gibbons. But it really feels like the legend of John Gibbons has really grown over the last few years, especially in the playoff years in 15 and 16. Whereas when he first came back in 2013, it was, what? Like, John Gibbons is coming back to the Blue Jays? Like, it's been great to see, because he's a guy I think that has deserved all this appreciation and accolades. Like, he's had some bad teams along the way, but he's been a good manager. He's been arguably the second best manager in the history of this franchise. And it's nice to finally see that people have really come around on John Gibbons and really do appreciate the job that he's done with this organization.
For me, it doesn't really, I mean, when it comes to baseball managers are the least, amongst all sports, to me, the least important when it comes to the outcome of a game. I don't know where you guys land on that, but that's kind of the way I feel about managers. And for me, like, I mean, the way I consume baseball, I mean, I watch the games, I listen to all the post-game stuff, I listen to the media availabilities and all that stuff, and I mean, John Gibbons is exactly what I want in a manager for a baseball team. He's an affable guy, seems to understand what it takes to win a baseball game, has the admiration of all of his peers. I mean, we did At the Letters this week, and Shai Davidi got a bunch of different audio from managers around the league, and I cut him up a little intro
That was great.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I heard that.
Whatever,
that
I just great. Put, yeah, and it was just him talking, like, and it was, he had Buck Showalter talking about him and just raving about him. Had Tito Martinez just raving about him. He had all these guys just raving about him and talking about what, like, how much respect they have for him as a baseball man. I mean, I personally don't really understand why he has to go. I mean, I guess you want to have your new guy, your own guy, for the sake of having your own guy. But I mean, it just seems like it's just one of those guys. I don't really understand why he has to go. I mean, that's just me. I mean, after the last game there, just quickly, the little thing I loved was, I'm not sure who has the first question on the Jays. I mean, I've listened to a million Gibby conferences because I do Jays Talk a lot. And it's always the same guy that asks the first question. I think it's either Richard Griffin or John Lott.
Yeah, it goes back and forth. Yeah, sometimes it's different
the
people.
The best
yeah.
thing after the big ovation, everything, and the first question, hey, Gibby, what'd you think of Sean Reed Foley today? And he just cracks that huge Gibby smile and just starts laughing. I'm going to miss that kind of stuff, because I just hope that they don't bring in some robot type manager that's just like a John Verrill type, or like somebody where it's just like there's no relationship, there's no affability. Like, it's just so important to me to have a guy who's affable and funny and just kind of gets it, you know? And that's what's Gibbons. I don't know. I wish he wasn't going, to be honest.
Anytime a manager takes a team to the playoffs, it's a different story. They're automatically etched in that city's mindset forever.
It's true.
And Gibbons did that back-to-back years. So yeah, I mean, it's a sad moment in that sense. For you think of some Jays fans. I mean, you know, all of us were probably in our 30s. So we remember
almost. I'm still in my 20s, okay?
All right. You'll get here soon.
I got a few days left.
But yeah, I mean, we remember the Buck Martinez days when he was managing, Carlos Tosca days, the Jim Fregosi days. Mm. But Gibbons, for at least a portion of the Jays fan base, he's all they know. You know, people who kind of are coming of age and picked up baseball in 2015 when the team was good, this is the only guy they know. So in that sense, it is a sad moment.
Yeah, and I'm with Sam in that I think, you know, baseball managers, out of all the managers and coaches in pro sports. They probably have the least impact on the actual game. You know, you can obviously lose a game if you decide to bring in the wrong reliever at the wrong time, and those things can definitely happen. But I think what I appreciated about John Gibbons is that just so many players had respect for him, and the fact that we saw all the players waiting in the dugout for him to finish up his interview. Like, you know, everybody that's come across John Gibbons has had nothing but good things to say. And yeah, he had his run-ins with Ted Lilly, and he had his run-ins with Shea Hillenbrand. But those guys since have come out and been like, yeah, we're on good terms. And when you're in a competitive environment, things like that are going to happen from time to time. I mean, we remember Cito Gaston and David Wells getting into their spat, and Wells throwing the ball down the third baseline and you know, into foul territory. So, you know, that stuff always happens, of course, when you're in such a heated and competitive environment. But you know, in the end, you know, things always work out. And John Gibbons, what I love about him is that he just lets the guys play, and he lets, you know, doesn't get into the players' business, doesn't enforce all these crazy rules. Yeah, there's going to be accountability when things don't go right. You know, we saw earlier this year him yelling at Kevin Pillar after he tried to steal third base, down four runs in a game, and he deserved it. And, you know, Kevin Pillar, you know, I think he realizes that, hey, like, yeah, I know I screwed up. And he, you know, respects John Gibbons, knowing that he has to say that kind of stuff to him. So, you know, people talk about accountability with this Jays club, and people have talked a lot this year about how the fact, you know, John Gibbons doesn't do enough of that. Well, he does. Maybe he doesn't do it on the bench, but maybe he does it, you know, or in the dugout, but maybe he does it behind the scenes. I mean, we don't know those things, but the fact that we've never heard a bad thing said about him from any player, all we hear are good things from the players. I mean, Troy Tulowitzki said it earlier this year as well, that, you know, John Gibbons has been great to play for in his time in Toronto. I mean, I think for me, that's been big. I think all of these players want, especially a veteran club, they just want somebody that's going to let them go out there and play their game and do what they do, and not get into their business and try to make them something that they're not, or, you know, try to enforce all these crazy rules. And we saw what happened in St. Louis with Mike Matheny, and why that team struggled so much, because he was like a dictator there, and, you know, had snitches in the bullpen to keep a track of young players. Like, that stuff would never happen under John Gibbons. The fact that, you know, he would have all these spies around the clubhouse and all these you know, people keeping track of what's going on behind the scenes. He just lets the players go out and just play.
I think we had, like, the Jays had him as like a sort, we had him around here as the manager before the playoffs, and like, he kind of was maligned in the year leading up to 2015. And I think that the first time that I really was worried about his decision making, and like, because in playoff baseball, it's just every decision is weighed upon so much, and playoff baseball in general is just so stressful as a fan. And when he started Dickey in game four in Texas, and then he had in the bullpen David Price warming up, and I remember thinking, what the hell are you doing, Gibby? Like, why? You got to save Price for game five. Like, why are we, like, what are you doing here? This is insane. And anyways, he brought in David Price. It worked. And they started Stroman in game five, and he was great, and they won. So it's like, I remember questioning that decision so hard, and then just being like, you know what? He was right. And then kind of from that point forward, I really trusted his decision-making. And I said, it doesn't really have that huge of an impact. I mean, Russell Martin's going to manage the game. I mean, I think it's like, I mean, Mike Babcock's not going to be like, oh, you know, I think I'm going to let Austin coach this game. I think it's a little different, right? I think managing in baseball is so much less stressful than it is of coaching in any other sport. So I think John Gibbons is a great one. And I think a lot of it shows that if you have a good relationship with the media, that you'll be painted in a certain way as well. And I think that's an interesting aspect of it too.
That moment you brought up kind of shows his deftness at working with young players, because at that moment, he basically, bringing in Price in the game, ensured Stroman was going to pitch game five.
Mm-hmm.
Stroman was a rookie at the time.
Yeah, coming back from the ACL.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, he put that faith in Stroman. Stroman responded, and Stroman kind of, they developed a good working relationship there, where Stroman knew that Gibby trusted him.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just, you know, a small move that, you know, Price wasn't going to be back the next year. I think the writing was on the wall. People knew that Stroman was going to be back, and he did help the 2016 team reach the playoffs.
Yeah, he went with his guy.
Yeah, he went with his guy. So that's just a small move that, you know, Gibby had a certain touch to him, you know?
I think there's a lot of it with the, I think a lot of the reason I asked why he has to go, and I think a lot of the reason it is because of, like, sort of the new wave of managers that you see kind of across the major leagues. And I think that this front office kind of wants to dip their toe into that philosophy. Like, I mean, I think Gibby would have to have his arm twisted around his back and off to have an opener, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you look at the Rays, they have the opener. You look at some teams, what they're doing. You look at, like,
shifting.
What's the guy in, I can't believe I'm forgetting his name, the guy in Philly, Gabe Kapler, right? That's his name? The manager, like, he's doing a bunch of crazy stuff. And I think that this front office and Ross Atkins in particular is sort of wants to be a more forward-thinking, sort of analytical type guy. So I think maybe that's part of the reason they want to bring in someone who's more forward-thinking. And Gibby is definitely, he's not like he's not archaic, but I definitely would say that he's more in the old school per se. So I think that's probably the reasoning. But I mean, color me in the Gibby camp of wishing he would just stay around.
Yeah, and I think just the timing is right as well. You know, the team's coming off a bad season, so you can definitely sell it like, hey, it's time for a change.
For sure.
We know the new crop of young players is definitely coming up to the Blue Jays in the very new future with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette and the like, so we will definitely see them over the next few years. So that ties into the next topic here, and that is, of course, which players are we watching right now that we think can have a long-term future here? And there are a lot of guys that are going to be under control, the Teoscar Hernandezes, the Billy McKinneys, and the likes. But which ones have you been sold on so far, having watched them this year, David, that you can really feel comfortable about saying that these guys are going to be part of the core heading into the next few years?
I'm going to give you guys a hot take here.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Let me have
Brandon Drury.
Mm-hmm.
I'm high on him.
Okay.
Okay. So I spoke to Yankees GM Brian Cashman way back in April for a piece that I wrote. And if you remember, the Yankees had been trying to get Brandon Drury for several years, and they finally acquired him. I think it was just before spring training, maybe during spring training. And when they acquired him, they fully intended to give him the third base job, right? They had identified a few things with his swing that needed work, and he's one of these launch angle guys. I think he had made shifts towards the end of last season into changing his swing, and they had high hopes for him, and then his season was completely sidetracked by those migraines. And, you know, he was never the same when he came back. He lit up AAA, but then he had that broken, I think it was some hand injury with the Yankees right before he was traded to the Jays. So Jays fans didn't really get to see the real Brandon Drury. I think, you know, a healthy Brandon Drury in 2019 with the migraines passed him, with his hand issue healed, I think he could turn some heads. I think, you know, you heard rumors right after the Jays acquired him. I think Ross Atkins even admitted it, that he was fielding offers for Drury after the Yankees traded him to the Jays. So there's a clear reason for that. He's sought after. I don't think I don't think he will be lost in the logjam that they have in the infield. I think he's a guy who, you know, based on scouting reports, I think he could be something. I think that the Jays have something there. And there was a sense in New York as well when they made that trade that the Yankees didn't want to give up Drury. They just had to because they needed Hap. They needed a start. They were desperate for a starting pitcher. I think there's a sense that they really gave up an asset they did not want to.
Well, that's definitely a hot take, because I would say that most people are not in that camp, probably because we haven't seen a ton of Brandon Drury, but because he's a guy that has not produced at exceptional levels at the major league level. So I think that's why our people are definitely not as high on him as you are. But I think, you know, for me, just moving forward, I think he's going to be okay. I think he's a major league player, but do I think that he's going to be a star? I don't know that. I think what the Blue Jays are doing, though, is that they're getting a ton of these guys that, you know, have this type of capability, and maybe, you know, they see more potential in a Brandon Drury, a Teoscar Hernandez, a Billy McKinney, Randall Grichuk, in the hopes that one of these guys becomes the next Jose Bautista. Like, they're just hoping that these guys are lottery tickets and one of them hits the jackpot, or that the team hits the jackpot on one of these guys. So, you know, I would put Brandon Drury in that grouping with Billy McKinney, Teoscar Hernandez, Randall Grichuk, that these are some guys that have had some pedigree as prospects, and at the major league level, they've, you know, taken some time to figure things out. But as we've seen with Randall Grichuk so far this year, Sam, and even Billy McKinney, since he's come up to the Blue Jays, I mean, these guys are pretty exciting, and to think about what they could do over a full season in 2019 gets you pretty pumped, I think.
I like what I've seen from Grichuk, and especially after the start he had. He was awful. For how long? What was his average? His average was below, like, won like for a long stretch of the season. And he really could have just mailed it in and really just kind of had a bad year. But he's really picked it up, and he's had a great year for the Jays. And I've definitely made me think that he could be something. And you talk about, like, I mean, obviously the approval rating for the front office here is probably not through the roof.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they've had some bad deals and whatnot. But that trade looks great for Dominic Leone, who up until last year was a total gas can, and this year has not pitched at all for the Cardinals. That, and Connor Green, who is doing the same thing Connor Green did in the J system, not being able to throw strikes at a fast pace in Double A. So that was a great trade, and I think he really has a chance to be like a big part of the future. Obviously, I love, like everybody else, I love what I've seen from Lourdes Gurriel. I think he's really, he has versatility, but I think he's a great shortstop. I think you see that arm, the way he throws a ball, he can really get to balls because he's tall, good range. I think he really has potential to be a good shortstop in the major leagues, and the bat really plays there. But I got to say, I'm definitely worried about the pitching staff, and I definitely think it's going to take a long time for them to rebuild the pitching staff. I mean, we've seen guys come up in September. I mean, sure, Pannone's been okay. I mean, Sean Reed Foley's shown flashes. Baraki's been solid. But, I mean, Sanchez, again, with the finger, right? Stroman, blisters. And when he didn't have blisters, pretty ineffective this season at times. I mean, who in the bullpen other than Giles, who I have been blown away by, super nasty, really good closer. But no one in the bullpen, like Biagini, Tapera, all these guys. I think this pitching staff, I mean, obviously needs a ton of work. I mean, I'm not trusting pretty much anyone outside of Giles, maybe even Sanchez and Stroman. I'm not depending on anything from those guys. And, I mean, to lose Hap, I mean, Estrada's obviously done. I mean, they really, really, really need some work in the pitching staff.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy how far we've come, David, especially at the beginning of the season when it was, hey, the starting rotation is going to be one of the strength of this team with J-Hap.
Jaime Garcia, fifth starter. How can you believe it?
Yeah, exactly. So, now that we're at the end of the season with two games remaining, it is true that there's a lot of question marks about this rotation heading into 2019. And even if Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez are healthy, are you going to get the same effectiveness that we saw from these guys a couple of years ago? Who knows? I mean, Marcus Stroman battling these blisters, which is never good. Aaron Sanchez battling blisters and this finger thing. And even when he's been healthy, he hasn't been able to throw strikes at the same rate that he did back in 2016. So there's cause for some concern there. These young guys and Sean Reed Foley, Ryan Baraki, Thomas Pannone, that can they carry over what they've done so far into next year? Like, there's just a lot of question marks with this starting five, and we don't even know who's going to be in it. I mean, there's a chance that Sean Reed Foley and Thomas Pannone don't even start the year with the big club. You would like to think Ryan Baraki is going to be there. I think a lot of people have penciled him in to the starting rotation next year just because there aren't a ton of options beyond those guys. I mean, who else do the Blue Jays have in their system right now that they could feel comfortable about starting with the big club next year?
I like Baraki, and I think he cemented a spot somewhere in the rotation next year. I think because of, you know, what you guys just talked about, the one of the top offseason things on the agenda for the Jays is get a couple of guys who can just eat innings. A couple
for
of
sure.
veteran starters. I don't
Bartolo
know.
Bartolo Colon.
Big sexy. I wouldn't hate that.
I don't know. Maybe I've seen Matt Harvey. You know, maybe a Matt Harvey because he doesn't look like he's going to cost a lot, but you just get guys who can just eat innings. Like an R.A. Dickey type almost. Just someone you slot in there for 180 to 200 innings, almost guaranteed. That's got to be of paramount concern for the Jays this offseason.
Well, I think that's what Baraki's going to be, right? Like, you kind of can see the formula there that he's going to be the type of guy probably for his whole career that'll be in the range of a 4.5 ERA and kind of pitch, have his games where he's great, have his games where he gets lit up and sort of pitch 200 innings. Like, I mean, it's easy to draw the parallels, but so many parallels there between him and Burley. I mean,
yeah,
he wears the same number. He's from Chicago. I mean, his hero was Mark Burley growing up. So, yep. I mean, he wears the same number, soft toss and lefty, works quickly, seems to eat innings, pitch. I mean, he's been by far the Jays' most consistent starter since he's come up. So I think, he's by no stretch of the imagination a top of the rotation guy.
No.
Like, I don't think there's anybody in Toronto that would argue that, including the three of us sitting here. But, I mean, he's definitely penciled himself into one of the starting roles for sure for next season. But, I mean, they need a one, they need a two, they need a four and a five sort of thing. I mean, I hate to say it because Aaron Sanchez was so dynamic for the Jays, but is there a chance that this just is what Aaron Sanchez is? I mean, at what point, right? I mean, how old is he now? Like,
he's 26, I believe. Do
you think there's a chance he gets back to being 2016 Aaron Sanchez?
Well, I think for him, and you know, I've said this numerous times. You go to his baseball reference page, or you go to his FanGraphs page, and you look at his career. There's one season that stands out from the rest,
yes.
And that was 2016.
Exactly.
And you go, okay, is that the actual guy, or is that just an outlier
what's the
season?
Outlier here?
What's the outlier here? And that's the one that stands out. So I think, you know, that potential is still there. I think what is hurt is just because he's been hurt the last 2 years, and he just hasn't been able to pitch on a mound healthy, and we haven't been able to see him get any consistency. And he's been in the lineup, out of the lineup, and there's been a lot of different factors that have led to, you know, why he's been so poor the last couple of years. So I think next year is going to be a really big year. If it's the same kind of stuff where he's banged up or there's ineffectiveness, then I think we'll get a better sense of, you know, what Aaron Sanchez is. But I think right now I'm still willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, get healthy this offseason, same with Marcus Stroman, come back, and then we'll make a decision after, you know, next season or maybe at the deadline. Maybe these guys can, you know, pitch particularly well. Maybe they get some value up, and then maybe they're dealt. Who knows? But I think for me with Aaron Sanchez, I'm still waiting to kind of see how things go next year. I feel a little bit more confident about Marcus Stroman in that
Agreed.
When he's been healthy, he has been pretty good. And we saw it, you know, when he first came back after the shoulder injury that he dealt with last year, that he was pretty good. So he's been battling blisters as well, which is never something a pitcher wants to deal with. But I think with him, I definitely feel more confident out of him and Aaron Sanchez. So we will see tomorrow, by the way, guys, Russell Martin managing this team. And kind of interesting in that Russell Martin is still under contract for next year for $20 million. But, you know, you would like to think that maybe this is a peek into Russell Martin's potential future when he's done playing. Could be after next year, after he makes that final $20 million. Who knows? But I don't know. Are you guys reading anything into this? That not that Russell Martin's going to be managing the Blue Jays in 2019, but, you know, is this a potential career path for him once he's finally hung up those cleats?
Well, I think first off, it's just a nice nod to Martin because he hasn't played in September because the Jays have been rightfully so, giving time to Jansen and McGuire behind the plate. So that's relegated Martin to the bench. And for such a competitive guy, for the type of winner he's proven to be, I think this is just a nice nod to him. And then also at the same time, with Gibby, it just feels like last week or Wednesday or whenever the final home game at Rogers Center was, that just felt like the end. And these two games, you know, the Friday night game in Tampa Bay, the Saturday game, it just feels like, you know, you're just waiting for it to end for Gibby. So it's nice that the attention will be off him and it'll be on Martin, and just give Martin some sort of, you know, throw him a bone, I guess, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And I think Martin's the type of guy like that will be on Gibby. Like he'd be like, hey, Gibby, I want to manage. Hey, Gibby, I want to play shortstop. Hey, Gibby, like that's why he played him at shortstop. He's like, wow, he stink anyway. He's like, yeah, go ahead, play shortstop. That's what you want to do. So I think that he was probably on him about this for a long time. And he's like, you know what? Yeah. Screw it. Last game of the season. Why not? But I mean, I think it's going to be good. And I think that definitely Russell Martin's going to be a manager. I don't think any of us think that he won't be. Maybe not next year. Maybe not player manager style. But next year, I think he's going to be the most expensive utility man in the MLB. Because, I mean, that's what he can do. He can play third. He can play short. He's an amazing athlete. He could probably play any position on the field if you need him in a pinch. So, I mean, I think he'll be the most expensive utility man in the league next year. And then probably the following year, I would picture him going right into managing.
Yeah. That's the thing. There are managers who, you know, like Aaron Boone, don't have to have coaching experience, don't have to have managing experience.
No.
They can go straight to, you know.
Well, same with Cora, right? Cora had no managing experience.
I think
he
just winter ball in Puerto Rico. That's it.
So then he's going straight into it as well. So I think that's kind of the way of the future. And I mean, that would be very forward thinking if the Blue Jays were just like, all right, Russ, you're the manager now.
Right after 2019 or maybe next season.